When war or disaster strikes, we often want the world to intervene. We feel relieved to see foreign aid flooding in, and it's good to know that we're helping. We assume, of course, that our contributions are saving lives, or at the very least helping rebuild countries and communities that have been shattered by natural disaster or overrun by violent extremism. But some say trade works better than aid, and a few say both are overrated and all motivations are suspect. Anthony Lowenstein has spent 6 years examining nations that have been pulled apart by conflict and disaster. The result is Disaster Capitalism, a documentary film currently being shown on limited release, and he joins me now. Anthony, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
What inspired you to make this film?
So I was researching a book, which also was called Disaster Capitalism, which came out recently. And the idea behind it really was to say that we read about all these disparate issues, the wars in Afghanistan, aid, trade, Haiti, Papua New Guinea, elsewhere. And I was inspired by Naomi Klein's book, The Shock Doctrine, which came out in 2007. For those who don't know, it was a book that looked at how people are making money from misery, essentially. And she was looking at the wars in Iraq and Hurricane Katrina, New Orleans, etc., and how certain corporations are enriched by disaster. Now, obviously, people have been making money from disaster forever. That's not new. But what is new is the scale of it. And I wanted to expand that thesis. So I started doing research for the book and the film. I started partnering for the film with a guy called Thor Neurider, who's an American filmmaker based in New York. He's now head of video at Columbia University. And he and I spent 6 years going to Haiti, Papua New Guinea, and Afghanistan twice each, following certain characters there. And the book in some ways covers similar ground, but is a bit bigger because you have more space in a book than a film. And wanted to focus on, not to say aid is wrong, stop aid. There are some people who argue that aid is a complete waste. We're not saying that. But we wanted to look at where our aid is going. Is the aid targeted? And are people in those countries actually benefiting from that aid? And we would argue that, as the film shows and as my book shows, and in many cases that's not the case. And I think there's a good reason why that's not happening. And I'd say it's by design rather than by accident.
When you look at Afghanistan, or the movie starts in Afghanistan, I have to say it's very courageous to see you going into places which are plainly full of insurgent activity.
It was scary. Yeah. I have to say it was scary to plan that. We had local sources that we trusted, but it was hairy.
Because you were looking at a village that essentially had been forced out because Chinese interests believed that there were vast fortunes to be made from copper and other minerals. Mm. And so these poor hapless souls who were there had all kinds of promises made. But in the end, they were pitched out into poverty while, as it turned out, it was Chinese government-backed big business that was in there trying to make a killing.
One of the great stories about Afghanistan, which is largely unknown, is that when the Soviets were there many years ago, they discovered under the ground huge amounts of untapped resources. The Soviets, of course, got kicked out, and fast forward to the Americans coming in 2001, and the Americans continued the research the Soviets had done and discovered that there's anywhere between $1 to $4 trillion of resources under the ground, most of which have not been mined because the country's been at war now for essentially 40 years. And as you say in the film, we focus on an area called the Einak Mine. The Einak Mine was bought by the Chinese a number of years ago. It's one of the largest copper deposits in the world. And as you say in the film, we visit an area which is literally an hour from Kabul, Kabul being the capital. And this is, you know, imagine an hour from Sydney, but literally it's the heart of the insurgency. And you have a local village, and we could have shown many other villages in that area, which essentially have been shafted, yes, by the Chinese, who came in pledging to help them. If the mine appears, we will give you roads and schools and mosques. That didn't happen, and they now feel pretty angry. In fact, they're on the verge at the time of joining the insurgency, which would have been against the US and also Afghan forces. But to make matters worse, the Bush administration, the Obama administration, and now, in fact, the Trump administration is ramping up, trying to assist what they view as a possible revenue source for the Afghan government and for foreign companies. So the idea of giving support to foreign companies to go into the country and mine resources and therefore send that money overseas into Afghanistan. It's been a complete disaster. And I say disaster because the mining that does exist in the country, with a few exceptions, is now run by the Taliban. In fact, the Taliban's resources after opium is mining. That's where they're getting a lot of their money, which allows them to fight the wars that they're fighting now and essentially have made them at a stalemate to the US. The war.
It's a bit like the way ISIS was still extracting oil and selling it to fund what they were doing.
For sure. So we wanted to focus in the film about, although mining should not be seen as aid, the US views mining as part of the aid budget. So when the US is giving money to support American and foreign companies to mine in Afghanistan, they've spent more than $500 million in doing so. That money has mostly gone to other companies that didn't have a clue what they were doing, has gone to Afghan companies that were corrupt. And as we show in the film, as one particular village, mining is not going to be a solution in a country which is wracked by violence. And still, what's been very disturbing since the Trump administration has come in, and in fact I'm working on a story at the moment which I can talk a little bit about briefly, is that the Trump administration and Trump himself is very strong believer in that mining can somehow bring fortune to the country. But what he actually means by that is, as he said during the election campaign, why can't mining pay for the war? In other words, why can't we get all this money and bring it back to the US or take it out?
So it's the same argument about oil in Iraq.
Indeed. And Trump has been very honest about that in a way, saying, why can't we take the oil? We've gone into their country. That's what we should be getting in return. So essentially what we say in Afghanistan is that mining has been viewed as a panacea for a war, which will not work, because ultimately the locals, as we show in the film, are suffering. The locals not getting any benefits.
They don't get a stake in it.
Don't get anything. Yeah. And the effect of that has been the insurgency has never been stronger around them, and they're pretty scared. And they were scared seeing us, and we were scared seeing them. An hour from Kabul.
If I can take you to Haiti, where there's, I think one of, for me, the saddest, most tragic element of this was the Haitians endured this appalling earthquake some years ago, where huge amounts of that. So it was the poorest country in that part of the world already, and then this thing happened. And that what you depict there is that they've been provided with housing, often far away from where their previous housing was. But the deal is that essentially they're attached to industrial parks where they are used effectively as almost a captive labor force for clothing factories, so that cheap clothes, that they get paid very little money, but the capitalists, if you like, who are running those factories are doing very well out of having a source close to the US market.
Well, companies like Walmart and Target and others use Haiti as very effective cheap labor. And a lot of Americans may not be aware, even though it's literally a few hours from New York or Washington or Miami for that matter, that Haiti, although on paper it's independent, in reality it's a US client state. And as you said, there was an earthquake there in 2010. It was disastrous. There's been numerous disasters since, natural disasters. And the economic relationship between the US and Haiti is very clear. WikiLeaks, when they released their State Department cables a number of years ago, showed from the US perspective, there's no interest in Haiti being a democratic country, because if you're a democratic country, you're likely to insist on more labor rights for your workers, for more democratic accountability. So what you've seen now over the years is, as you say, a number of foreign companies come into Haiti, and the Haitian government, in theory, makes a decision, but the decisions are being made in Washington. This idea that Haiti is an independent sovereign nation, it's not. There is a government, and there are ministers who on paper have influence, but in reality they don't. So we visited in the film, and as we show, a number of individuals who were almost didn't have a choice but to work in these parks, $5 a day US, often had no alternative but to do so because there's no other work. That $5 has to also include transport and food, so they're getting essentially slave labor wages. And the woman that we focus on there decided to leave and start her own business, still earning not very much, living in a slum in Port-au-Prince, the capital.
But she has some independence and some control over her life and all that sort of stuff.
She does.
I wonder with this, that sort of notion, because the grand rhetoric that goes around there is that this is trade and trade is going to do great things and lift these people out of poverty. But there was also an enormous aid organization, independent aid groups going into Haiti. And in fact, one of the characters in your film, an old man, speaks derisively of how Haiti became a republic of NGOs. And effectively, the message there is that all this foreign aid money being donated, doubtless by school children across the world, was ineffective. It was self-serving for the aid groups and was doing very little to change anyone's life on the ground. So is the aid effort, as we know it, as completely ineffective, in your view, as the trade and government involvement?
To be clear, we don't say in the film, I don't say in the book, that aid full stop should stop. I don't think that. And I think in Haiti, although the examples of how badly aid has been delivered clearly is a warning sign, what I think we're saying in the film, and I'm saying in my work elsewhere, is that make aid more targeted. You'd be amazed how often in Haiti we heard from the top down how rarely locals were asked what they wanted. Mm. What is required? What exactly do you want? Do you need training for jobs? The problem in Haiti was, after the earthquake, when the was an Obama administration was in power, he put Bill Clinton and George W. Bush in charge of work after the earthquake. So often US companies got those contracts. US companies go down to Haiti, do the work themselves and leave. Now, the work often was done in a very shoddy way, one. B, locals were really engaged. C, locals are really trained. So when those companies leave, what are locals left with? Not very much.
So the capacity building, as they like to talk about it, building up a local community,
is minimal.
Doesn't happen,
yeah. Now, obviously, there are some cases where it did, but there are a lot of examples, for say, with the Red Cross, one of the largest companies in the US that was doing work in Haiti. They pledged when the earthquake happened that they would raise money from the public and build thousands upon thousands of houses. Well, ProPublica, the great US media organization, has discovered that they've built literally a handful. Now, you ask yourself, where is that money gone? You've raised billions of dollars from the US public for apparently Haitian housing. If the money hasn't gone to the housing, where is it gone?
Where is it gone?
Now, again, in Haiti, ProPublica was not arguing that Red Cross is profoundly corrupt, but they were saying that too often that money is going to costs of the organization themselves, and too rarely locals are engaged. And of course, in a place like Haiti, so far there's not something like an insurgency. In some like Afghanistan, there is. And there's no doubt that so many people we spoke to in Afghanistan have said over the years that one of the reasons they're incredibly upset with what foreign intervention has done is they're not benefiting from it. And if you're not benefiting from it and you see, for example, a Taliban, or you see alternatives that are offering you, say, money to fight, as a Taliban or Islamic State are doing, you can understand, in a way, why that would be seen as appealing.
Mm, absolutely. Well, it's a diminishing part of the Australian budget, but Australia is still spending, I think this year, $3.9 billion for a foreign aid budget. Are we as a nation wasting our money, or are we quite good at it?
Well, it depends where you go. So the last part of the film is in Papua New Guinea, which is our nearest neighbour, and I focus especially on Bougainville. Bougainville, for listeners who don't know, there was a civil war there in the 70s and 80s. There was, at the time, the world's biggest copper mine run by Rio Tinto. The mine was unbelievably profitable for the company in the country, but the locals got shafted. Essentially, there was an uprising. There was an awful, bloody civil war. 20,000 people or so were killed out of a population of 200,000. So that's an amazing per capita destruction. You go there now, as I've been there twice in the last years, and what you see really is a province stuck in time, that you see all these destroyed buildings that were burnt out in the Civil War 20 years ago still destroyed. The reason we wanted to go back there was that there is now talk in 2019, next year, of an independence vote for Bougainville. Australia, the PNG government, is opposed to that independence vote because they argue that the Bougainville could not stand on its own two feet unless they reopen that mine. Mm. And the problem is that, yes, you asked, was aid wasted there entirely? No, there's no doubt that we saw in Bougainville hospitals and medical care provided by Australia. That's a positive thing.
And we sent in peacekeepers as well.
We did. We sent in peacekeepers. But before that, Australia also backed and funded and trained a brutal PNG army that killed and raped and pillaged the Bougainville area. So, yes, Australia claims that they helped bring peace. But before that, they helped a PNG army cause chaos in Bougainville. And there's never been accountability for that. And a lot of people I met in Bougainville are still waiting, I suspect, for still a long time, for some kind of apology from Australia. So what's happened in the last years is the aid budget to PNG has definitely, on one level, increased because Australia wants PNG to house and warehouse our refugees on Manus Island. That's obviously one part of the equation. And a lot of people in PNG who I spoke to are pretty ashamed about that relationship. But the second issue in Bougainville is aid is being held as a weapon against Bougainville's head to say, we will only support you in a serious way if you reopen dirty mining. Now, a lot of people in Bougainville have said openly for years that we do not want the same problems of the past. And if you simply reopen a mine again, then the problems are not being solved. The environmental destruction is still there. I mean, you see, you go to Bougainville now and a lot of it is like, it's just like a wasteland there. So what we're trying to say, I guess, in every single country, they might seem quite disparate, is that the similar issues are at play in every country. If there's one message from the film, it is the simplest of all here, which is to say, listen to what local people want. It should be such an uncontroversial thing to say. And yet so often it is actually not done. And the Australian government certainly has pushed trade far more than aid. And in PNG, as anyone who, be honest, would see, the major mining companies in PNG have not brought assistance to the local population. The metrics of PNG has never been worse. So I think Australia needs to look at itself in the mirror and say, where is our aid money actually going and is it helping?
The film is called Disaster Capitalism, and my guest this morning has been Anthony Lowenstein. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.